Peter B. Collins with News and Comment here on Wednesday, June 13th, 2012.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire.
I don't know exactly why, but I had the urge to open up with Johnny Cash today, and there was a joke in the newspaper over the weekend, and the comment was that Steve Jobs passed away, Bob Hope passed away, Johnny Cash passed away, so we got no Jobs, no Cash, no Hope. All right, you can decide whether that's funny or not. Well, in today's in-depth interview, again, issued absolutely free, you don't have to be a subscriber because the Citizens United case is front and center, and it could be as soon as tomorrow, Thursday, that the Supreme Court decides whether to take the case or decline it and make our day by establishing the Montana Supreme Court decision as a precedent. And in today's interview, we talk with attorney Rob Hager. And we go into some detail about what might be might appear to you to be a trivial clerical issue. And that is, when the briefs were filed with the Supreme Court in February, the case name read a certain way. And now it reads differently. And the difference is that the file name of the case makes it appear that the case is personally against Montana's Attorney General Steve Bullock. And that could be a sleight of hand end run on the 11th Amendment case brought by Attorney Carl Mayer and the folks at TEAM, the 11th Amendment Movement. And their website, again, is 11thamendment.org. That's 11th, 11thamendment.org. And I'd like you to listen to this. It's a little bit longer than usual. It's almost 4 minutes. But it's a powerful set of comments from attorney Rob Hager on whether we can have confidence that the Supreme Court will follow its own rules. And whatever it decides to do with this appeal from Montana that could have the effect of overturning its Citizens United decision starting in the state of Montana. Here is attorney Rob Hager.
It should be clear to everybody by now. It's not. I know it's not to some people, but people need to get used to that we have five political operatives now in control of the court. This happened in 2006 when Alito replaced Justice O'Connor. And we've been teetering right on the brink of this for many years. You know, this was a 5-4 court for many years. And when Alito replaced O'Connor, that was the final shift. It tilted it over to there are five justices who will now routine. A lot of people think of Kennedy being the middle, but he's never in the middle on any issue of power. And so we have five justices who really are tricksters. And they are there with a political agenda. They are not there to uphold the rule of law, uphold the Constitution. They are there to create and maintain a plutocracy in America. You know, they're benefactors. And they're on the court. These guys are not legal giants. We used to have people like Thurgood Marshall and Justice Frankfurter and Justice Holmes, and you know, well-known figures in the law who had succeeded in various areas of life, including politics. Justice Warren, Governor of California, Justice Black, Senator from Alabama, and so forth. We do not have a single elected politician right now on the court. You know, we have these bureaucratic functionaries, by and large, who are there for political reasons. They're there for ideological reasons. George Bush put on the most right-wing ideological judges he could find, as did Nixon when this all started. None of his judges are left, of course, but that's where it all started. And so we have right-wing ideologues who have a political agenda which is way to the right of mainstream America. And they're in control. We have a Congress who is supine in the face of this, just giving up their powers to the court, allowing the court to amend the Constitution without going through the. And so we really have to rely on either the states, on the one hand, to stand up to the court, which is what Montana is doing here, the Montana Supreme Court is doing, and we feel that the Montana Attorney General is not doing, or we the people have to start prioritizing this issue of money and politics and getting the Supreme Court out of this subject altogether. That is the solution, but we all have to get together and prioritize that issue, or it's not going to happen. No, we can, just as you said, totally subscribe to your statement that we cannot rely on these five justices to apply the law. And if you, and if you know, anyone wants to, they can read Justice Stevens' 90-page dissent in Citizens United, and that's what he's saying in a very judicious and gentlemanly way. You know, Justice Stevens was a model of a true judge. He had a judicial temperament, and so you have to read that decision. But that's what he's saying there, is that these guys are just, they've divorced themselves from any fidelity to the law itself.
Rob, I appreciate your characterization of this court, and the only thing I would add for the edification of our listeners is a reminder of how young the conservative corporatist justices are, and that we have decades to run with them on the Supreme Court. And it just brings to mind my disappointment that Obama appointed two centrist, pro-government, pro-corporate nominees to the court when he could have put a full-throated liberal up there to attempt to really balance the court packing that has occurred in the last 15 to 20 years. And I encourage you to listen to the full interview. Again, it's free at peterbcollins.com. You'll also hear some interesting speculation on why Montana Attorney General Steve Bullock doesn't want to use the 11th Amendment. It appears that he wants the Supreme Court to take this case so that he could be the grandstanding attorney presenting it to the Supreme Court right before the November election when he is on Montana's ballot as a candidate for governor. Also, in today's in-depth interview, we talk with my good friend Maureen Fiedler. She's the host of the public radio program Interfaith Voices, and she is a Catholic nun, a member of the Sisters of Loretto. We have a wide-ranging conversation about the so-called war on religion, she doesn't buy it, and on the recent crackdown by the Vatican on nuns like Maureen Fiedler, because they do not follow the party line on same-sex marriage, on abortion rights, and on the recently ginned-up controversies about contraception. So I hope you'll check that out, too, again at peterbcollins.com. As I approached the microphone, I picked up the news that the Holder Justice Department has decided not to launch a retrial of former senator, former presidential candidate John Edwards. I believe that it was misguided to try to try him on campaign finance laws to begin with. Maybe we need some new laws about how to pay hush money to your mistress and what's legal and what's not. But I'm relieved to see that they won't waste our time and effort in a retrial of John Edwards. Now, if they want to do the right thing, they would drop all the charges against Don Siegelman, the embattled governor, former governor of Alabama, who any day now could be resentenced. And if the Holder Justice Department has its way, resentenced to even a longer term in federal prison. And as we have detailed at great length here at peterbcollins.com, Don Siegelman was railroaded into prison, falsely convicted, in a cabal that includes friends of Karl Rove, a corrupt federal judge on the court in Alabama, and many other issues. Speaking of Holder, there are quite a few attacks on him from the Republican right. They don't like the way he has just picked two U.S. attorneys to investigate the leaks of the president's formerly secret Kill a Terrorist program. And as you know, I think that the issue of the leaks is much less important than what was revealed by the leaks. But still, the Capitol Hill gang is focused on the leaks and trying to embarrass the attorney general. Now, I consider him an embarrassment, but for far different reasons. And as we spoke about yesterday, the Fast and Furious case about guns and the border, they've worked hard to cover that up. But as you know, I'm even more concerned that they have failed to prosecute Wall Street criminals, failed to prosecute Bush-era war criminals, failed to stop the illegal wiretapping of Americans in the United States. And the list goes on and on. I don't think he's going to resign. But I would certainly entertain a left-right coalition of people who have different reasons for wanting the same outcome, which is a new attorney general. My experience has been that when you replace a bad attorney general, you get one who's worse. We traded Ashcroft for Gonzalez, for Mukasey, and it just got increasingly worse. So we can't rely on the dream that a resignation would produce a better situation. Also on Capitol Hill, Jamie Dimon faced the Senate Banking Committee. And of course, he's paid off every one of those fuckers. Pardon me. But it's irresistible. I'm sorry. What a dog and pony show. J.P. Morgan Chase is temporarily on its heels for losing about $3 billion in highly speculative trades. Trades that might have been reined in by the Dodd-Frank bill if J.P. Morgan Chase's lobbyists hadn't been so busy delaying its enforcement and watering it down. And other Republican loyalists have cut the budget of the Securities and Exchange Commission, the IRS, and anybody else who could investigate corporate crime. And so Jamie Dimon comes and is pretty well received by the Republicans at the Banking Committee. And he says, oh, well, yeah, we lost about $3 billion. And he fed a little catnip to the board. He said, we're going to try to claw back some of the bonuses that we paid to the former executives who blew all this money. Now, this is a very interesting development. Eric Holder, did you hear about this? Clawback. This is an opportunity the Obama team had when they first came into office to claw back the bonuses of people like Angelo Mozzillo from Countrywide Financial, all the folks on Wall Street who got bonuses for derivatives and these other toxic instruments that led to the wreckage of our economy. And not a dime was clawed back from people who certainly at some point crossed the line from bad judgment to knowing fraud. Clawback. I like the ring of that. I'd like to see it used in a real way. I want to commend the group Public Citizen. A document was leaked to them, and so far the Senate is not pounding on their door trying to find out who leaked it. But I'm going to post a link to this 9-page PDF that gives you a tour of a proposed new NAFTA-like agreement. It's called the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And I'm just going to briefly breeze over a couple of the problematic elements of this proposed deal. But the biggest problem with it is they've been trying to keep it completely secret, saying that, well, you know, in the past when the details of trade deals have leaked out, it makes it harder to close the deal. Well, there are a lot of ugly things in this package, and that's why they're keeping it secret. The language says that signatory countries can regulate foreign firms operating within their boundaries with requirements to provide them with greater rights than domestic firms. You got that? So a foreign company comes into the United States and asserts that our domestic laws are not as important as their rights under the TPP. It sets up a two-tier system, and we are on the lower tier. And when it comes to regulations that can cost corporations money or even reduce their projected profits, they're allowed to make a claim against, in this case, the United States. So we pass an environmental regulation, and a foreign-based oil company says that is cutting into our projected profits, not real ones, projected ones, and they could make a claim against the U.S. government. And this package is riddled with pieces that are very troubling. For example, it sets up foreign tribunals that would evaluate disputes between corporations and states. The tribunals would be staffed by private sector lawyers who rotate between acting as judges and representing corporations who are suing governments. Now, what kind of a judge are you going to get who just came off a case working for ExxonMobil or some sheikh in an emirate, and now he or she is the judge in a dispute? Another piece, investors can demand compensation if new policies that apply to domestic and foreign firms undermine their expectations of how they should be treated. I mentioned this a minute ago. Expectations, projections. They can collect just because a new regulation or policy in our country diminishes what they hoped to make. So I encourage you to check this out. It's an issue that will be simmering for some time, and this does represent another potential sellout of the middle class, labor interests, and our fundamental rights as a nation by the Obama administration. Elections are scheduled this weekend, and I think they've already started voting in Egypt. Elections also underway in Greece, where there's been another run on the banks. People are hoarding canned food and other supplies because they fear that if the leftists are the victors in this weekend's election in Greece, that they will depart from the euro, and a return to the drachma could have significant adverse consequences for the average Greek. In Egypt, there are all kinds of things going on. There are court challenges to the election as it is getting underway. There are issues raised about who is going to draft the new constitution. And the courts, which are dominated by those who are loyal to the military rulers who currently are in control in Egypt, have decided that there are too many Islamists and that they're trying to put more alleged liberals on the commission to draw a new constitution. And so it's going to be very interesting to see, A, if the Egyptian vote is, you know, able to be conducted peacefully and credibly, and then exactly how it might be implemented once there is a result known. And the choices are pretty weak. You basically have a loyalist to the Islamic Brotherhood who the secularists fear will turn Egypt into an Islamic state, and you have a former prime minister from the Mubarak era whose participation may be disallowed because of a recent law passed that basically bars him from running. So if we get an outcome that in any way reflects self-determination by the Egyptian people, I will be pleasantly surprised. Israel's state controller, the government watchdog, has issued a report harshly criticizing the government of Benjamin Netanyahu over the attack on the Mavi Marmara in 2010. And this is a case that I followed closely. I had friends who were on this Gaza flotilla trying to break the Israeli blockade. And this brutal assault that occurred in international waters. And by the way, the story I'm referring to here is published in the New York Times and never mentions that the attack by Israel occurred in international waters in clear violation of the rights of the sailors and international law. So a retired judge named Misha Lindenstrauss was asked to evaluate it, and he said that he was very critical of Netanyahu and Defense Minister Ehud Barak, saying that they lacked preparation, coordination, and documentation related to the raid, and that they failed to adequately plan for the possibility that commandos might meet resistance when they intercepted the ships in international waters. And so the report says that there was a secret meeting called of the cabinet. After that meeting, the decision to raid the flotilla was made by means of a military operation, quote, without the plans having been presented in a detailed, orderly manner, and without any real alternative courses of action being presented. And this is another report that underscores the real accounts, the real-time accounts of the protesters who were on those ships, and it will be flicked off like a flea by the Israeli government. And finally today, Governor Cuomo of New York, responding to the outcry over fracking for natural gas, has decided to put some sharp limits on it. Hydraulic fracturing will be limited to portions of several New York State counties that share the border with Pennsylvania along the Marcellus Shale rock formation. And they are banning drilling in Catskill Park, aquifers, and nationally designated historic districts. And it even requires some local approval before fracking can occur. And in Albany, they're saying they're going to reduce the number of permits they had planned to issue from 75 to 50. And while this may not be perfect, this is an important acknowledgement of the dangers of fracking and the way that natural gas exploration is conducted outside the law, that Dick Cheney wired it so that states cannot regulate natural gas exploration, and that this has become a huge problem as the gas companies dangle cash in front of farmers and other people who are destitute these days and get them to trade short-term income for the long-term damage that is clearly caused by fracking. Thanks for listening. Share this podcast far and wide and visit my website at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.